Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's Friday, thank God. It's the 14th day of 2020. And that's the 14th day of 2020. It's the 14th day of August, 2020. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to Friday. Holy Frank Tanana, could we not all use a Friday? And if you feel as just balled up with obscenities as I do, I invite you to join me at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast, where at 1 minute after midnight this fine evening, meaning 1 minute into Saturday, the Curse Show Week in Review, the Week in Effin' Review, will be posted for those of you who are goodly enough to support the program for the mere low cost of $5 per month, or more, obviously. There's other options up there, including getting a signed book from me mailed to you. And I'll write pretty much anything you want in there, as long as it's not going to be used in a court of law against me. Oh, so much to get to, so little time. We have a great interview lined up for today. That's right, today. Horace Cooper is our guest. He has a book that drives the left nuts. It's just the title. See, Horace Cooper is a black man, but Horace Cooper is a conservative, or as Joe Biden would refer to him, as a unicorn. He doesn't exist because all black people think alike. Horace Cooper's book is How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, The Untold Story of Black Advancement in the Era of Trump. You're going to like the interview. You're going to like Horace. You're going to want to pick up the book. You're going to want to learn more about him. We've got all that information on how to do that in the program coming up. Just as a technical note, Skype wasn't an option for various reasons for Horace. So I had to record him through my phone, and then I had to record myself with the microphone simultaneously and then edit them together. So if it sounds weird at any point, it was because of my shoddy editing skills. If it doesn't sound weird, then I've got awesome editing skills. So there you go. Be ready for that. You're going to like that. But before we get to that, we have other news to get to that we will get to directly after I tell you about Life Change Tea. That's right. You know, you're dragging around. You're going, why do I not have the energy I used to? It's because your body's coated up with all sorts of things on the inside on your digestive tract that are preventing your body from being able to extract the nutrition from the food that you eat. That's right. You're already eating probably a bunch of processed food that has a lot of nutrition stripped from it, so you need to get everything you can out of it. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. It cleans you out, makes you go. It's like a squeegee for your innards. And then suddenly you'll notice, hey, wait a second, I'm not eating any different. I'm not doing anything differently. But now I feel like I have so much more pep in my old step. That's because you're getting the nutrition, the max nutrition out of the food that you're eating. You go to getthetea.com. You check out the flavors. You check out all the products. You throw them in your cart. When you go to checkout, you enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on top of a great deal for a great product. Getthetea.com. Life Change Tea will change your life. Use as directed. Don't forget promo code Derek. Okay. Big Middle East peace deal out there. Official recognition between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. See, most people think that these countries just don't get along. And on a realistically, on a diplomatic level, on a government level, they mostly do get along. It's for domestic consumption that, say, Saudi Arabia can't recognize Israel, can't normalize relations with Israel, at least as of now. Who knows what President Trump will pull up next? But it's this weird situation where the governments don't really give a damn about the existence of Israel, but they're a useful foil for directing the hate, anger, and everything else that goes along with being oppressed or having a crappy life, that they take advantage of. Adolf Hitler knew that the Jews weren't responsible for everything, but he also knew that that the people, the great unwashed masses, needed a scapegoat. They needed somebody to blame. So the Jews were a convenient target, a convenient scapegoat. So they hated them. And if something wasn't going well, or if something wasn't working, or wasn't going the way it was promised, we can just blame the Jews. The Middle East is pretty much that way. You talk about a wealth gap, an income gap. There are incredibly, fabulously wealthy people who live over there, and incredibly poor people that you wouldn't even imagine. You couldn't, no matter how poor you are or have been in the United States, you have no concept of what real, true poverty is on a global scale. You got it good. You go by a homeless person, and there's a good chance they're going to be dicking around on their iPhone. Right? It's a different world being poor in the West, and particularly the United States, than it is in most of the rest of the world. So a whole bunch of poor people aren't necessarily happy people. Not that money's the key to happiness, but especially when they see rich people in their country really getting rich off government, people associated with government getting filthy rich off of it. You need somebody to blame for the state of things. And for a long time, since its existence, the Muslim countries have blamed the Jews. It's convenient. And for a long time, everybody blamed the Jews because it's convenient. There aren't a lot of them, so a lot of people maybe haven't met Jews. So they wouldn't know that, they're not controlling everything. The guy lives next door to me. He doesn't have anything either. So you end up with this situation where the country's governments get along through back channels, through diplomatic loopholes, but officially there's no recognition. Officially there is an aggressive posture, as they would say in the diplomatic corps. Well, today that changed. Now, two other countries in the Middle East prior to today have officially recognized Israel, Egypt and Jordan. They both border on Israel. The United Arab Emirates does not. It's a full Saudi Arabia away. But this is wildly important because this could be the first domino to fall. There does come a point where it's absolutely absurd that you're playing this stupid game of pretending this country doesn't exist, not having official relations. There are a lot of people who would love to travel to Israel in the Middle East. There are a lot of Muslim holy sites in Israel that a lot of Muslims would love to go to. But because their government is so obstinate, they can't. Now, they're going to have to work hard to sort of deprogram the people they programmed into thinking that Jews are responsible for everything wrong in the world. But that, I think, would be easier than it seems. It's the boldness of a leader of an Arab country saying, we are no longer going to have a hostile stance officially out in the open toward the state of Israel, that I think is the big breakthrough here. So I wouldn't be surprised if we begin to see other countries go, okay, you know what? It's enough of this crap. Let's move forward. We can still have our issues with the country while still having official diplomatic relations with the country. This has gone on too long. It's caused too much damage. And I think the radical Islamic terrorism that grew out of it and now is spread elsewhere, it's all fun and games when they were just attacking Israel and Jews. But suddenly it's coming at in their own countries. So like, we need to stop this. We need to stop fomenting this kind of rage that leads to just rage in general. Even if it was directed rage that was started, it's now rage in general. A lot like, sooner or later, I'd hope Democrats would recognize Antifa. While they're useful to Democrats in one sense for the energy and Black Lives Matter, that rage being directed at anything and everybody is probably not good, and you have to get rid of the rage itself. I don't know that Democrats will come to that conclusion anytime soon. It'll take really a riot that impacts them directly because they don't care about other people. But it's possible. It's possible. So it is called the Abraham Accord, where the United Arab Emirates and the State of Israel will officially recognize one another and officially establish diplomatic ties. This is big, big, big. The media is very confused. They don't like anything Donald Trump does that is positive. He is supposed to be a fool on the world stage and a boob, and yet here he is brokering this huge and important peace deal. Rashida Tlaib, who represents the district I grew up in and really just a pathetic human being, a disgusting anti-Semite, she's not happy about it. So if the anti-Semites are not happy about it, then it tells you that there must be something good about it. She writes, tweets, "We won't be fooled by another Trump-Netanyahu deal. We won't celebrate Netanyahu for not stealing land he already controls in exchange for a sweetheart business deal. The heart of the issue has never been planned formal annexation, but ongoing devastating apartheid. The focus needs to be on promoting solidarity between Palestinians and Israelis who are joining together in struggle to end an apartheid system. We must stand with these people. This Trump-Netanyahu deal will not alleviate Palestinian suffering. It will only further normalize it." Oh, she said, you know, she cares more about the Palestinian situation than anything going on in this country. She bitches about it nonstop. She is a full-blown sucker for identity politics. And she's Palestinian, and she refers to my people this and my people that. If you care so deeply, Rashida, go there. They need leadership. They have rudderless leadership. You seem to know all about it. You seem to care deeply about it. Go there. Take over. Lead them in the struggle or whatever the hell it is, because you sure as shit seem to hate the hell out of this country, and you hate Israel, and you hate everybody who doesn't look like you or think like you. So I invite you to go and show them how it's done. If it's so awful here, go show us how to achieve it someplace else in the world. You're facing all sorts of resistance to your anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic hatred here in this country. So go someplace where it's appreciated and show the world the virtues of anti-Semitism. I invite you to leave if you don't like it. But no, you'll just sit here, collect almost $200,000 a year, and bitch and whine and moan like a girl who just skinned her knee over the prospect of peace between two countries. Can you imagine that? What kind of sick human being goes, "Oh, there's a peace deal? No, screw that. Screw that. No, thank you. I don't want any part of that peace deal because it's with the Jews." What a pig. Here is the president sort of making that point much more artfully than I did, talking about which is more difficult to deal with, the Middle East or Democrats. Now, there's a thin, very narrow difference between the two since both are riddled with terrorists. But here's the president.
"So which is easier, dealing with the Democrats or dealing with the Middle East?"
"Well, a lot of people never thought you'd get this type of deal, so I'll be hopeful that we can deal with the Democrats."
"The Middle East is more reasonable."
It's only funny because it's true. Yeah, so this is good news. You would think this would be universally praised. Joe Biden released a statement saying good things about the deal, but he did not mention the Trump administration at all. He did not mention the United States of America at all. This deal would not have come to pass were it not for the United States leadership and urging on this deal. But Joe Biden is such a petty, petty little man that he could not simply say, "This is a good day for this shows the importance of American leadership," or anything like that. No, it was all about UAE and Israel. And if when I'm president, I'm going to totally make sure that we build on this. Build on what, Joe? Build on what? I thought that Donald Trump was a foreign policy disaster, an international pariah who could only bring about pain and destruction. What are you going to build upon, Joe? Why would you build on that house of rot? Well, it's because you're a goddamn fraud, you freak. Anyway, there's a couple of other things I want to touch on before we get to the interview. This is hilarious. I don't know who this person was. It was on MSNBC, and the video that I saw was a B-roll, so there's no indication of who the person was speaking. It was just a clip. But It is somebody up there, probably an MSNBC contributor, talking about the selection of Kamala Harris and their 8-year-old daughter. Their 8-year-old daughter doesn't seem, you know, once she found out that Kamala Harris, because what 8-year-old isn't enthralled by the VP selection of the Democratic nominee? What 8-year-old isn't interested in the fate of a 77-year-old white dude? And this 8-year-old allegedly is very excited now that Kamala Harris has been selected as Joe Biden's running mate, because that her ethnicity, her skin color, her parentage lets this 8-year-old know that anything is possible now. You know, the day before, she didn't know that, she thought nothing was possible, that this was just a cesspool of racism, hatred, and oppression in this country. But now that Kamala Harris, who was completely, totally, and utterly rejected by Democratic Party voters, so much so that she couldn't even last until calendar year 2020 or wait until one single ballot was cast. She dropped out because of oppression. But now that she's been raised from the dead by an old white dude, why, anything is possible. I hate it when people use their kids like this, because you know this kid didn't say this. I don't care if you talk about your kids, and if your kid really did something, you can make an analogy to an 8-year-old. When you start shoving your politics into the mouth of an 8-year-old because you want to try and own the conservatives, you're just a really bad person, and I would assume a shitty parent. But anyway, here's the audio.
To seeing those doors potentially open.
I like to look at it through the lens of what my daughter, who's 8 years old, when she heard that the vice president had picked Kamala Harris, her eyes got big, Chris, and said, my goodness, she's South Asian and Jamaican. That means anything is possible for a woman. And this is my daughter, who's 8 years old. And
this is not your daughter who is 8 years old, you gutter snipe. It has nothing to do with your daughter who's 8 years old, who couldn't give a damn about who the Democratic Party nominee is. And if they do, it's because you've been pounding this into their head through I would call child abuse. Let your kid be a damn kid. Oh my God, he picked somebody who's off-white to be his running mate. That means anything is possible. What in the hell have you been telling your kid up to this point, that they would think that not everything is possible? In fact, your whole life to this point is and forever is going to be determined exclusively by your skin tone and probably your genitalia, maybe, if you're lucky. You get a twofer. What have you been telling your kid? What the hell's wrong with you? Why would you do that? I have a feeling this is going to come up on the Saturday Curse Show, by the way, because I'm really fighting the urge to just start F-bombing everywhere. But this just drives me nuts. Democratic reporters do this all the time on Twitter. My 10-year-old came in and said that he didn't understand why Trump's monetary policy is doing what he's doing, because he's going to ruin the credit rating for the country, and therefore his future will be bleak. Like, your 10-year-old came into your room because he shoved a Lego up his nose and he can't get it out, okay? Let's not pretend that your 10-year-old gives a damn about monetary policy or anything else that isn't in the wheelhouse of a 10-year-old. You just want to make a point, and you can't think of a good way to bring it up because you want to say this stuff about how Trump is awful, but you're trying to pretend that you're a journalist. Now, this is slowly going away because journalists have given up on pretending that they're journalists, but it still exists to a certain extent on social media. Why, the zygote we have that parasitically attached itself to my wife's womb asked me the other day whether or not Donald Trump really is a sexual pervert, and so he doesn't really want to live in a world like that. Yeah, I believe you talked to your zygote. I believe you talked to your dinner from last night, because your head is so far up your ass, but that's about as far as I'm willing to go. So this is the reaction of the left. This is the way of the left. I have a little montage here. Now that a woman of color, oh my God, did I mention that Kamala Harris is historic and a woman of color, which makes her, wait for it, a historic woman of color? Why, they're already measuring out the Abraham Lincoln up on Mount Rushmore so that they can knock him out and get her big hair in there. They're hoping to be able to do that because she's historic, you know. And a woman of color. Did I mention she's a woman of color who's historic? I don't know if I've mentioned that enough. But these people are freaking insane. Well, right before and right after the announcement by the Biden campaign, it's weird how it didn't matter before. You about halfway through, they switch from before to after. The talking points from the Democrat media didn't change at all. It was criticism of Joe Biden's running mate choice will be sexist and most likely be racist. I guess the subtle change is that it's no longer most likely to also be racist. It's they're going to be sexist and racist. Any criticism of them. And for my money, I don't care who it is. I would never, ever politically support anybody who is portrayed either by themselves or by their fans, and in this case, both, as being above criticism. Now, they'll never come out and say you can't criticize because that would be death. What they will do is couch every criticism under one of those two categories. It is sexist or it is racist, which effectively, no matter what the criticism is, which effectively means you can't criticize her without being called one of those things. There's no criticism acceptable because it falls under the banner of one of those two things. They can't say, there are criticisms of Kamala Harris, of course, that are perfectly legitimate. But this one and the ones that the Trump administration are making against her, that's uncalled for because it's racist and sexist. And the Republican National Committee is making racist and sexist comments about Kamala Harris. And they won't really tell you the substance. They won't tell you the story behind the substance. It will just be another day, another racist attack. They telegraphed this punch. And that's where this montage from the, I think it's the Media Research Center. It might be the Washington Free Beacon. They're both very good at this. That's where this montage comes from of the media basically telling you you can't criticize Kamala Harris at all.
Dust off the good old sexist broken record because it's back. Do you worry about racism and sexism?
How worried are you about the role racist and sexual stereotypes are going to play in this campaign?
Those attacks play directly into racist and sexist stereotypes about black women.
Incredible double standard.
So we've heard the word misogyny.
Racial, misogynistic,
the double standard, even the misogyny.
We have a bit of a double standard in this country.
We are seeing that even in the vetting of these extraordinary women.
Race baiting language, sexist language.
Might be misogyny, might be sexism.
It's sexist and racist attacks.
Sexist and potentially racist.
Racially incendiary language.
Sexist attacks or comments.
Sexist attacks.
These gendered or sexist attacks.
Using that really gendered word.
Many feel that some of the remarks have been sexist.
It's just sexist in nature.
Race baiting, race freighted, racist.
They were going to be getting a volley of sexist and a lot of racist attacks, and it's already underway.
It's already underway. It's already underway. Poor Kamala Harris. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. If that's your whole life is, you can't criticize me because of the color of my skin, then you should be criticized for that very reason. That if you're that fragile, you have no business being in the public eye. You have no business being in a leadership position. I will never vote for anybody people are portraying as above criticism. The media portrays as you can't criticize her. Why, if you criticize her, you're doing it because of the bathroom she uses. No, I'm doing it because she advocates really god-awful, terrible policies. She's a liberal Democrat. She is against law and order. She opposes the police, supports Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Now, why do I say it? Has she said anything? She said some things. But also, I know the new golden rule by the left. Silence equals consent. So unless she's actively condemning the violence of the left, then she supports it. Right? And so does Joe. And so do all of those media hacks sitting there clutching their pearls going, oh, this sexist, racist attack against Kamala Harris. Oh, well, my God. What has this world come to? What a world. What a world. Shut up, jackass. Before we get to the Horace Cooper interview, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. And if all you have to do to enter, it's the easiest contest you'll ever enter in your life. You just text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. All right, without any further ado, we get into Kamala Harris, the selection and race and everything going on. Now it's time for the Friday interview with Horace Cooper. Okay, as promised, we are joined by Horace Cooper. He's a senior fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research and co-chairman of Project 21 National Advisory Board. You see him all over TV and constantly, man. I'm jealous of how much attention he's getting, and he deserves it for his new book, How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, The Untold Story of Black Advancement in the Era of Trump. Welcome to the show, Horace.
Hey, Derek, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on. Congratulations on the book. I want to get into the book, obviously, but first I want to get your take on the Harris selection. You are a black man yourself, so I assume you're now shifting gears completely thanks to identity politics and voting for Joe Biden because he put a black woman on the ticket, correct?
As I have been saying, this is a case of fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on me. Black America fell for this idea that all you needed was a guy or gal who was the same color and all of your troubles would go away. After 8 years of Barack Obama, black Americans found out a few things. More black Americans lost their homes than had lost their homes in the last 20 years preceding. More black Americans had their cars taken from them. Our black Americans just couldn't get a new car. More black Americans went on unemployment. More black Americans went on food stamps. After 8 years of Barack Obama, there were unbelievably four records of high unemployment that hadn't been seen since the Department of Labor was keeping track. Under 3 years of Donald Trump, you saw something entirely different. Records for employment. Six separate record-breaking levels of low unemployment for black Americans. More black Americans end up getting a pickup truck. More black Americans ended up moving into their homes. So when Mr. Biden names Kamala Harris, who has no demonstrated interest, support, or experience with the free market, black Americans are going to be looking with a jaundiced eye. They're just not going to be nearly willing to walk in lockstep. Now, I didn't get fooled when Barack Obama was running. So, of course, this hasn't been any effect on me. But I'm just telling you what the data shows what black Americans.
No, I know. You're a very smart guy. I've known you for a number of years now, and you know your stuff. But I also know Joe Biden. He's been in public office forever and since the earth cooled. And he tells me that black Americans don't have any diversity of thought whatsoever. So I'm at a loss as to who to believe. Now, how offensive is that, that he not only one time let it slip, but twice in the same day let it slip that essentially I don't have to try to win black voters. I've got them in my pocket. And besides, as he told Charlemagne the God, if you ain't voting for him, you ain't black.
Yeah, I mean, this is this entitlement mentality writ large. Apparently, even the super elites have this idea that you get to look at people on the basis of their race and make assumptions. Now, it's true that black Americans vote in larger numbers for Democrats than the population at large. But it's not true that A, black Americans don't make a choice, or B, that black Americans don't hold views that allow them to allocate their vote based on those views. And this is one of the reasons why I think we're looking at some significant shifts in the upcoming election. Is it going to be the case? Are you saying, hey, Cooper, are you claiming that the black vote is now going to go for Trump and the Republicans? No, I'm not saying that. But I will tell you this. Black Americans have been giving more than 90% of their vote to the Democrats. It was Hillary Clinton that got that number down to 88%. So that's only a 2-point drop, right? Well, here's the thing. If black Americans don't maintain at least an 85% level of support for Democrats, you create enormous problems with the Electoral College. You create significant problems with Democrats retaking the United States Senate. And when you're talking about statewide office positions, you also create similar disadvantages. You need at least 85. Now, Rasmussen, Pew, and a couple of other surveys have been coming out all summer showing black support being up for grabs and as high as 35%. That means Democrats would be getting 65% in when you're talking about Donald Trump approval, when you're talking about projected expectations with regard to voting. There are significant issues behind that, and they largely line up with the whole issue of how does the economy work, how does the free market work, and what's in it for America, and in this case, this group, for black Americans.
Why is it that the Democrats get 80-90%, such a high percentage? And Hillary Clinton was hurt not only because she got a lower percentage, but because a lower percentage of black voters bothered to show up, because Hillary Clinton was the least inspiring candidate perhaps since Walter Mondale. But why is it that it has been that way for so long, when in fact the Democratic Party is the party of racism, is the party of Jim Crow, the party of slavery? They've, to my mind, Horace, they haven't changed their objective. They've changed their tactics. They're still calling for segregation, but now it's weirdly under some bastardized version of understanding of tolerance. You know, you need separate graduation ceremonies, separate school dances, separate facilities, separate student centers. I imagine somewhere George Wallace is going, see, that's exactly what I was pulling for.
No, absolutely. So to your last point, I think all of America has been told a lie. And I say all of America, I mean, if you became an adult after the 1990s, you were told that Jim Crow and segregation were this aberrant period in which racists rose to power predominantly in the South. You aren't told that one political party, it's the oldest political party in America, in fact, it's the oldest political party on the planet, actually has always used race to obtain political hegemony. And that has not changed in the 21st century. And the seeking of that political hegemony, that gain based on racial politics, undercuts the argument that it was actually bigotry and racism that drove Jim Crow and that drove segregation. Actually, it was a quest for power. It was a quest for control. It was a way to dominate the political ethos in the areas where they were doing this. And there is no difference today. There continues to be, we want power, we want control, and if we need to get America to galvanize on racial lines, we're more than happy to continue doing it. And that's why, in fact, that there should be an apology given to all of the so-called bigots and racists of the 1930s, the 40s, and the 50s. They simply were doing something that modern day leftists are doing with regard to race. And that hasn't changed. It doesn't sound like it's going to change. So you asked the question, what are we going to do about Black Americans and how did we get to a point? Black Americans were seduced by this idea that if you have greater government engagement in the control of the economy and the society, Black Americans will benefit. And this was posited largely as a 1960s proposition as part of the Great Society. It took quite some time for a realization to occur that it doesn't work. And by the time of the Reagan administration and even the George Herbert Walker Bush administration, we understood we didn't have the money for it. We understood that there were many flaws in the thesis. And so we started this idea of what are other strategies that can work. Republicans have been, especially Donald Trump, which is why I wrote this book, have been responding with market-based solutions that have benefits not just for America as a whole, but for Black America as they are part of that whole. The problem has been that the left has not come up with its alternative. In fact, all they can do is talk about what you will lose if you don't continue to support them. They don't actually have a platform. Up until Bernie Sanders helped Joe Biden roll out a proposal this summer, the lion's share of what Democrats wanted to do showed who their most favorite constituency was. It's not Black America. They wanted to completely legalize all the people who've come to the country in violation of our laws. They wanted to make it easier for people who are not even in our country to be able to come. And they wanted to guarantee that that particular group was able to participate in all of the social programs that exist. Trillions of dollars would be expended for this effort. Their second, the so-called Green New Deal and the Green Agenda writ large. Those initiatives, again, are very, very costly and very, very pricey. And finally, group number three, just real quick, the LGBTQ community. Three different constituencies, they drive policy, they drive decision making, and most importantly, they drive the budget of what the Democrats are pursuing. Black Americans are largely left out, and that's part of the reason that Donald Trump has gotten this opening to come through with initiatives, proposals that actually are beneficial.
Why has it been, and you're absolutely right, the Democratic Party takes the Black vote for granted to the point that they don't even pretend anymore. And I've said, you know, the Democrats, the second the Hispanics become a large enough voting bloc and they get their talons into them deep enough, the Democrats will cast the Black vote aside and they won't even bother paying lip service anymore. But why is it that, and this is one thing that's always driven me nuts, and Donald Trump has scared the hell out of the left by that in that Detroit Economic Club speech where he said, what the hell do you have to lose? The Republican Party has been so awful at and reluctant, really, at messaging to Black Americans. Rand Paul got a lot of kudos for going to Howard University and giving a speech in 2016. It doesn't seem like it should be that hard or that rare that a senator, a United States senator, giving a speech at a historically Black college is newsworthy and groundbreaking, but it is. Republicans had given up on that vote for a long time. So it's not like it's just Democrats lying. Republicans walked away.
So I guess I would have a little bit more nuanced position. I used to work on Capitol Hill. I worked for Dick Armey, who ultimately became the House Majority Leader, and I sat in the room while critical decisions were being made. Very, very frequently, when it came to, quote, urban community policy, the argument was made that there are finite resources with your time. You can go and campaign here, you can go and campaign here, you can buy ads here, but you don't actually have an unlimited budget. And this particular constituency, they hate us. So we are not actively going on our way to harm them, but if you are operating in a world of not unlimited, but limited and constraints, you see something a little different. Here's the thing about Donald Trump is it doesn't actually require campaign ads. It doesn't actually require even scheduling a day where you walk through the urban community. He can, with a tweet and a speech, reach more Black Americans than Newt Gingrich was able to do in 8 years with control as the Speaker of the House of Representatives. It is a remarkable shift that our social media era and our president, who is the trolling king of social media, has been able to reach out to Black Americans in a way that they wouldn't otherwise. But the policies, welfare reform, which the Republicans pushed in the 1990s, was amazingly positive for Black America. The restraint on the growth of the minimum wage was amazingly, remarkably impactful for Black America. The capital gains tax cuts were amazingly good for economic growth and opportunity. It is not the policies, but it is the effectiveness of getting out that message. But as I say, Donald Trump has a second advantage, and that second advantage is that there are a number of Black Americans that saw nothing positive actually happening under 8 years of Barack Obama and many negatives occurring and wondering, wait a second, what are some other alternatives? And I think with that mindset, I'm seeing the signs of a burgeoning shift. I predict that you're going to see the largest Black gender gap in about 50 years, where Black men are going to disproportionately, that number could get to 40% Black men not voting for the Democrats.
That would be a game changer. I think you're being wildly optimistic, but I'm also naturally pessimistic. But if that happens, the Democratic Party becomes what the media has been telling us the Republican Party will become. It'll be a regional party. It'll be in the Northeast, and that's it. We've been told every time Republicans lose an election, that's it. Republicans are done. They're going to just have a few seats in the South, and the rest of the country will be rational, and then the country strikes back. But if something like that seismic shift happens, it would be a game changer. Now, Horace, your book, How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, what would you say is the greatest policy change that Donald Trump has made that it has had the most impact on Black Americans, that since you're not going to watch, Lester Holt is not going to deliver this news, David Muir is not going to deliver this news, what would you say that people don't know that they should know?
The whole point of my book is that there was a period in America in the 20th century when Black America was gaining amazing levels of prosperity. There was a period when in our federal prison, the characteristic least likely to be a federal prisoner was to be Black. There was a period when you were more likely to be born in a two-parent household if you were Black than the population at large. There was a period when the number of Blacks in the workforce was the highest level, and in fact, so high, government had to come up with restrictions. We call that period the Roaring Twenties, and Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge set up policies that postulated this. Most of the time, government gets it wrong. Government needs to pull itself back, get out of the way, and let people do their thing. And we created, during that period of time, it was called the Roaring Twenties, remember, more Black millionaires. And on a per capita basis, we had more Black millionaires in the Roaring Twenties, higher than in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. You have to go to the 1980s before you, on a per capita basis, see the number of blacks who are millionaires. There was more wealth created. There were more small businesses created. What my book's thesis is, that the very types of policies that created the Roaring Twenties are the policies that Donald Trump has been putting into place now in the 21st century. And as we head into the 2020s, perhaps Black Americans can regain. We are seeing that they are catching up at a faster rate than the population at large. Economic growth, job creation, savings. I mentioned how under Barack Obama, we invented this new word for what happens when you have leave time from work, but you can't go anywhere. We called it a staycation. That just meant you're broke and you can't go anywhere. Well, 3 years in a row, America set records for the number of people, 2017, 2018, and 2019, how many people went on their vacation, and including how many people went on their first vacation in a decade. We did the same thing in November 17, 18, and 19. How many Americans, including record numbers of Black Americans, actually went to see grandma for Thanksgiving? We set new records for dropping the age on highways of the age of the vehicles driving because people could afford to buy new cars. So the dirty little secret is there has been an unbelievable revolution in what has happened when government stopped deciding it knew best how to allocate the resources in America and instead trusted us to reach in, snatch opportunity where we found it, and be able to exploit it.
But we have a situation where economic news was good. I mean, obviously, coronavirus blew a hole in that for everybody. So there's a possibility of backsliding there because politics elections are about what have you done for me lately and what are you going to do for me next, not what have you done in the past. But the culture, particularly popular Black culture, there isn't, if there's an Alex P. Keaton type character that is a conservative Black character on TV, they are largely viewed as an article of scorn, as the butt of jokes, things like that. But I'm thinking more about music and the disintegration of the Black family. That has to be reversed for any long-term goal. I'm not saying it's got to be Ozzy and Harriet or anything like that, but that ridiculous Cardi B song, I forced myself to choke it down once, and it's just, I don't care how dirty it is. A dirty doesn't bother me. I'm offended by how bad musically and how stupid lyrically it is. But it's wildly popular, and I would posit that people who enjoy that kind of crap, with no medley, no nothing, are less likely to, let's just say, be future lawyers. Not that the world needs any more lawyers, but it's sort of an indication, and it doesn't really matter the race, of the rot of society. And with that being out there, you can build a bridge as you're building the bridge and building the bridge. If the bridge is rotting behind you, you're not ever going to really make it to the other side, if you get what I'm saying. So how do we combat the bigger picture, the underlying, beyond the government policy issues that are causing a lot of problems, not just in the Black community, but in society writ large?
So de Tocqueville came to America, and he outlined what he saw were the examples of how non-governmental institutions worked to promote the interest of the society at large. I believe that what we saw in the 1960s in America was an erosion of the creation of stakeholders. When you become a stakeholder, you naturally shift your mindset and your orientation. One of the things that the left hasn't been paying attention to is the substantial growth in sort of non-traditional stakeholders in Black America, people that maybe aren't college graduates, people that Black Americans, for instance, are disproportionately Black men, are disproportionately serving in our military. Black Americans, Black men, are 6.2% of the population, and yet they're 11% of law enforcement. These types of individuals bring experiences and mindsets to the table so that when they ultimately partner up, those people they partner up with, their values are passed along to those people. When you allow folks to be able to get their first new home, when you allow folks to be able to say, you know what, let's do that whole, you know, America vacation idea. What you do is it shifts people's mindsets away from the kinds of things that are distractions, away from the kinds of things that are even harmful. You start getting people adopted in the mindset of what do we do that we should to maintain this? One last point here. When the original March on Washington occurred, the speech where Martin Luther King, the place where Martin Luther King gave the I Have a Dream speech, people think that that was an organized civil rights march. It was actually a jobs rally. Blacks wanted to be able to be self-sufficient and support themselves. Now, we got teased into a 20-year experiment that government will provide for you, and it's turned out government won't. And now it's turned out not only will government not do it, it will abandon you at your worst circumstances. Many Black Americans are waking up to what are the success strategies I need? What are the success strategies my kids need? And if you go on social media today, what you're going to find is an explosion of Black voices that sound far more conservative, I guess I'm going to use the word, more reactionary than anything that I've said in this interview, because they get it and they want to make sure that other people hear it, learn it, and it gets passed along.
Let me ask you this, Horace. As you look at the Democrats trying to seduce the Hispanic vote, what would your warning be to the Hispanic community, as you watch, as you've lived your life experience, as you watch them trying, I imagine it's a lot like the Hansel and Gretel watching somebody else be sucked into the candy house.
Beware if you're looking and saying, well, they did it to them, but they won't do it to me. You know, it's the famous line, first they came for. I watched, and one of the things that I watched as a young person and now an adult, and one of the things I felt was important to identify in my book is how Black Americans, particularly the working class, particularly those who are underprivileged, are taxed with sales taxes, and are taxed in a way that make it easier to get the money from them and get it at a higher rate than it is for the population at large. You and I don't favor progressive taxation, but progressive taxation purports to say those who have the most are going to give a higher percentage. Regressive taxation does exactly the opposite. Well, if you look around America, you're going to see that since it's federal policy that foreign immigrants in the country illegally are not supposed to be subsidized, it's local and state governments that are doing these subsidies, and they have to do it with regressive taxation. Blacks, who used to be the most favored minority for the Democrats, are now the tax place paid for favorite party. And it would be great if Latin America looked around and said, oh, wait a second. And now once we've been seduced and once we're in, we can now be taxed so we can pay for whoever the newly favored group is.
You're a naturally just, I don't know, a positive person. And you, at least you, every time we've hung out, you have just a cheery disposition. When you look at the 2020 election, you see the polls, and yeah, granted, it's months away, and I understand the flaws in polls, but as somebody who follows the news every day, it's tough to not look at the news and just go, oh, crap. What do you look at what do you see and think when you look at the 2020 election, given everything, the totality, the coronavirus, the voting by mail, the Democrats being hell-bent on not letting the facts stand in the way of a good story, the media getting rid of the thin veil that remained and no longer even pretending to be honest brokers? That's an incredible amount of stuff to overcome for anybody, but particularly somebody who's party is at best 50% uneasy with him. What do you think the president's prospects are?
Well, if you've ever bought a new or a nearly new car, if you've ever bought a new or a nearly new home, if you've ever made a major purchase, most people do not say, well, let me see, it's 2019. I think in January of 2021, I'm going to need a new car. I'm going to start looking now. I'm going to start reading reviews now. You're lucky if you can get people to take 3 weeks of time to make a $35,000 or $40,000 car purchase. You're lucky only if the market is really scarce, if you can get 6 weeks to 3 months of interest in buying a home, the single largest financial purchase that anyone can make. And yet, we're told that if people tell us in May or tell us in July what they're going to think in November, that's the end of the story. The truth of the matter is that most Americans are going to do this the same way that they do the other major decisions. When it's time, they turn their attention to it and they ask themselves the kinds of rational questions that I anticipate we'll see. Ronald Reagan in the summer of 1984, when he ran a 49-state sweep, he was actually behind Walter Mondale. Now, if I didn't tell you Walter Mondale's name, most of your listeners can't even tell us who that person was that lost 49 states. In 1988, George Herbert Walker Bush, he was behind as late as August, and he ended up winning what was a very, very sizable victory over Michael Dukakis. Ronald Reagan was behind Jimmy Carter in the summer of 1980. The idea that the election is decided way back then, and we don't take in any information, we don't focus, I see no evidence of that. Now, let me add to that, I'm very disappointed in the business model of so many of the polling companies that apparently aren't really interested in getting used as a useful way to measure. You can't tell me how the election is going. How do I know what you can tell me about dog food?
Let me ask you this last question, Horace. When people read How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, the untold story of black advancement in the era of Trump, as they close that last page and they go to bed at night, what do you want them to linger with when they wake up in the morning? What is it that you want them to keep with them when they finish the book?
So I had the privilege of living when Ronald Reagan was alive and president. I want people to understand the history of governance, the history of government engagement is the history of government interfering, and often in a cruel way and in a destructive way. How about we have government that governs least, and we put back in the hands of people their responsibility? The reason that the book is great again is this isn't an experiment. It's not a postulation. I am saying that even while Jim Crow was at its zenith, it was unable to break down black families. It was unable to stop the creation of black businesses and black millionaires. It was unable to imprison black men. The idea that we have today needs serious review, and I'm asking people, think about what happens in your real life, how you can take charge, how you can be responsible, and a government that promises to do that is the government that really loves and honors you the most.
Amen, brother. The book, How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, The Untold Story of Black Advancement in the Era of Trump, is available now. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere fine books are sold. Horace, where can people find more of your work online if they want to look you up?
So on Twitter, follow us at Project 21 News, or you can go to www.nationalcenter.org. We've got several blueprints about COVID, about strategies for Black America that I think your listeners will find quite interesting. As always, our idea is policies that are good for America are good for the minorities within it.
What a novel idea, treating people as individuals and not as... not as part of a Borg or as part of a group that will uniformly, as Joe Biden said, have no diversity whatsoever of thought. Horace Cooper, thank you for taking the time today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Love Horace Cooper. I have been intoxicated with him on multiple occasions. The funnest one was up in New York City in a hotel room where we're all smoking cigars, where I'm not sure we were supposed to smoke cigars, but I think it was his room, so he was fine with paying whatever fine it was, should they notice the overwhelming stench of cigars in his room. Man, what a week it's been, and it's already to an end. But, well, not technically. Patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Tomorrow there'll be at least a half an hour of cathartic, rambling, ranting, swearing. No ads, nothing. It's all for the low, low cost of $5 a month. That's cheaper than the Columbia Record and Tape Club used to be, I think. Anyway, it'll be up there at midnight. It will be ranty and sweary and maybe a little bit yelly, depending on if I record it while the kids are sleeping or I'm assured they're someplace in the house where they won't be able to hear me through a closed door saying the F word and the S word and the Z word and whatever other words come out. First, before I go to the Z word, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. Yes, he does. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters, so be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is going to only a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you've got to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Lord, yes, amen. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. We are out of time. The clock keeps on tipping. As the prophet Steve Miller said, time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. The future is a weekend for everybody. It's also another half an hour of me ranting about the week that was. For those of you kind enough to go to patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast, I'll see you there and or see you back here on Monday. Have some fun this weekend. For God's sakes, we all need it. Thanks for listening.